Hi, Esther.
Okay.
Hi. I'm going to go on mute because it's loud where I'm at.
Hey, Anna.
Hi. How
are you? Hey. Did I get disconnected?
No.
Oh, okay. I just heard a lot of noise, then it went quiet.
Oh, I was in my car.
Oh, okay.
I'm just getting home from work.
Okay. Oh, I've been fooling with the new computer.
Ooh.
Almost all day with Hector. The other one just started all over again. Every few minutes, you know, the error message. So, in
yeah,
a way, I'm kind of home because, you know, I was about ready to call him and say, look, it fixed itself. I'm bringing the new one back. And so anyway, we've got it set up now, but, you know, I've got all these programs to install.
That's going to take a while.
Yeah. Well, I got to start because I've got to prepare for Shabbat, you know, the meals.
Yeah.
So. Okay.
I don't know why, but I'm just yawning and yawning and yawning.
It just starts so early, you know.
Good evening.
Hello.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Will you join me in playing the chorus? Gedula chemin sa ta ti serura alafet gimel yutat sadi kabel rinat amcha sagvenu taharenu no fresh iron sintet nun na gibor dor sheyehudcha kevavat shamrem nun gimel dalad yud kaf shin barchen tacharem rachamesit kasa tami Gam lem Petet resh Tzadi Tav Gimel Chasin Kadosh Berov Tuvcha Nael Adatach Het Kuf Pet Set Nunayan Yachid Gea Lamcha Penei Zohrei Kedushata Yud Gimel Lamed Hei Zayin Kuf Shavatenu Kabel Ushmati Akatenu Yodea Talumot Shin Kufav Tzadi Yud Taf. The letters of the month of Tevet, the bet that created the planet Chabtai, the planet Saturn, and the ion that created the constellation Gedi, the goat, and the astrological sign of Capricorn. The ion and the bet together have a gematria of 72, which connects us to the Sephirah of Chochmah, which is wisdom. We brought the energy of creation into our space, and we're now going to utilize the 13 attributes of mercy to separate between the right column energy and the left column energy. Adonai Yohe Wahe, Adonai Yohe Wahe, El Rachum V'Chanun, Erech Apaim, V'Ral Chesed V'Emeth, Notze Chesed L'Alafim, Notze Awon Wafesha, V'Chata'a V'Nake. We're now going to read the verses that connect us to the energy of the various years, starting with this year of the goat, 5777. There are two verses that connect to that energy. And the first that we will read is Lamentations, chapter 3, verse 52. And we'll start with the L'shem Yichud. L'shem Yichud Kudsha Barichu Ishkinte Bitzilu Urchimu Urchilu Urchilu Urchimu V'yachda L'shem Yudhe B'vavhe V'yichuda Shilim B'shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah Lasok Torah Mitzvah Vayhino Amadonai Eloheinu Aleinu Maasei Yadeinu Kananei Aleinu Maasei Yadeinu Kananei. Tzod Saduni Katzipor Oyevai Chinam. When we take the first letter of these words in the verse, we're able to permute it into three Hebrew words, Tzatz Ki Ach, which translates as appear like brothers. And when we take the final letters, we're able to permutate it into two Hebrew words, Dir Yam, which translates as a sea of tenants. The second verse that connects to this energy of the goat is Joshua chapter 23, verse 8. Ki im ba Adonai Yohe Wahe Elohechem Hadavaku Kasher Asitem Ad Hayom Hazeh. We're now going to also have two verses for the year 5775, the year of the pause. Second Chronicles, chapter 29, verse 34. Raka kohanim hayu limat v'lo yachlu lehavshit et kol haolot v'yechaskum achechem alevim. Ad kilot hamlacha yad yitkachu hakohanim ki halivim yishre levav lehitkadesh me hakohanim. There are 25 words in this verse. When we take the first letters, we're able to permutate it into eight names of God. Adonai Yohe Wahe, La La He, Wa Wa Wa, Yo La Yo Ala Me, Hey Hey Hey, Aka Are Kacha. The second verse that connects to the year of the pause is Isaiah chapter 26, verse 4. Bilhu Ba Adonai Yohe Wahe, Adead ki biya yohe Adonai yohe wahe tzur olamim. Then the year 5775, which is the year, the energy that swallowed death forever. There are three verses. The first that we will read is Job chapter 7, verse 19. Kama lo tishemi meni lo tarpeni ad bili ruki. The second that we read is 1 Samuel chapter 23, verse 23. Uru udu miko hamachavoiya asher yitzabe sham wishavten Eli El Nahum Wichalati Item Wichayim Yeshno Varetz Vehipasi Oto Bekol Alfe Yehuda. And the third verse is also from Job. It's chapter 20, verse 7. Kegelo Lanetzach Yoved Roav Yomru Ayo. And the verse, the one verse from 5774, the year of peace in the Middle East, is 2 Samuel chapter 7, verse 10. Wasamti makom leami leYisrael umtati vishakam tachta vilo yirgaz Od below Yosifu, Bene Avlal Anoto, Kasher Barishona. Now we're going to read a verse from the Zohar from Parashat Yitro, Pasuk 29, and the energy of this verse is certainty, which is the Hebrew word of Adai, Rav Dalet Aleph Yud. Rabbi Abba Amar Bekama Atar Tane Nan Dekucha Perichu Koma De'aved Leila Witata Kola Yihu Kishot V'ovada Dikshot Belayd lach mila bialma divaye Barnash ledachya leya mineya Ulan haga beya kilana dehakulu Ovada dikshot inun vekola Itzderich bialma. Now we're going to scan the 72 names of God. And the 72 names from the Tzaddikim. Tzaddikim who left this day, the 22nd of Tevet, Rabbi Shmuel Heller, Ashkenazi, Rabbi Yehuda Lieb Eger, Rabbi Shalom Mashkowitz of Shatz, and the 8th verse of the Ana B'Koach we say in a whisper. So our class tonight is Advanced Reincarnation. I believe it's in row 11 of the Revealed Wisdom Matrix, the second column from the left. When that opens up, Please go to Class 6D, Section 3, Colon 8. And we're starting at Nefesh Ruach Neshama for a slightly new Gilgul. Before we start, does anyone have any questions? Now we will explain what was mentioned at the beginning of the chapter. A secret of Gilgul is that when the need is great, a slightly new Gilgul can achieve breath, nefesh, ruach, and neshama at one time in a single incarnation without the need for multiple reincarnations, since the three of them will achieve tikkun in one body. Please hold on one second. What is a slightly new Gilgul? This will be explained in depth later, especially in Chapter 7. In brief, it refers to a person who has completed the tikkun of his nefesh, but not in his first Gilgul. And remember, Gilgul is reincarnation. Normally, such a person cannot rectify his ruach in the same Gilgul. He has to die and be reborn with his nefesh and his ruach together. However, there are special cases when the need is great that he can attain ruach and even neshama in the same Gilgul, in which his nefesh has been completed. This is possible, even though it is not the first Gilgul of the Nefesh. Although it is not the first time his Nefesh has been in this world, he has completed the tikkun of his Nefesh. Therefore, the Arizal calls him a slightly new Gilgul. And this will be explained in Chapter 7. It is this that makes possible the attainment of all three parts of the soul, the nefesh, the ruach, and the neshama, in one Gilgul. Normally, when the nefesh comes along, alone, and achieves rectification and purification, the ruach cannot join it since the nefesh has been rectified, while the ruach has not. However, there is a way to achieve rectification together in the same Gilgul when the nefesh is already completely rectified. When a person sleeps at night, he can deposit his nefesh with God, as is known. Thus, it is possible for the nefesh to remain above. Adhering to the supernal well and in the secret of Mayim Nukvim, female waters. Literally, Mayim Nukvim means female waters. It refers here to the holy sparks that are strewn throughout the levels and dimensions of creation. All of them, as was mentioned briefly in section 2 of this chapter, our learning of Torah and performance of mitzvot liberate these holy sparks from the klipot that imprison them. Then the holy sparks ascend upward to reunite with the sources of spiritual light. When this happens, they cause the downward flow of additional light and blessing. Because they ascend from below to above, they are called female. Since as in conjugal relations, the juices of the female flow from below to above, whereas the juices of the male flow from above to below. Indeed, all types of light that go from below to above, such as returning light, are also called female light. The classical abbreviation for Mayim Nukvim is Mem Nun, which we will refer to throughout this translation. These matters are known from Sha'ar HaTefillah in the section about going to sleep at night. Investigate furthermore, the place for water is in a well. Since there is a place in the supernal worlds called the supernal well, it is fitting that this nephesh that has been fully rectified and has ascended upward in the secret of Mayim Nukvim remain there in the supernal well. Consequently, the nephesh that has been completely rectified and has ascended as Mayim Nukvim to the supernal well does not descend in the morning when souls return to this world. It will remain in the supernal well, and in its place, his ruach will descend. When he awakens in the morning, his ruach will then enter by itself, as if reincarnated into a different body. This new situation will continue until it is rectified completely, at which point the nefesh will return into the body as before, since they both are now rectified. The ruach can be dressed within the nefesh, and the nefesh can be its vehicle. Once the ruach is also rectified, like the nefesh, there is no hindrance to its becoming ensconced within the nefesh, and the nefesh becomes its vehicle. Likewise, after the ruach becomes completely purified, then both the nefesh and the ruach can leave the body at night during sleep and be deposited above, where they will remain for the time being. In the morning when he awakens, the neshama will enter into him. It will become rectified, and once rectification is complete, then the previously rectified nefesh and ruach can return. The three of them will join together in the same body, and one will become the vehicle for the others. No more reincarnations will be necessary. Thus, there is a possibility that a slightly new soul can achieve rectification of the nefesh, the ruach, and the neshama, even though it is not his first gilgul. This lesson now becomes the basis for a new esoteric exposition of the following verse. All of this is alluded to in the verse. My nefesh has desired you at night. Even with my ruach that is within me will I seek you. This verse comes from Isaiah. The interpretation: my nefesh became purified until it was able to cling to you in the secret of and cling to him. It then desired you and yearned to cling to you. The time of desiring and yearning is specifically at night, when souls may be deposited because they are ascending in the secret of Mayim Nukvim to cause a supernal sivug. Since the time of yearning is at night, it was written, my nefesh has desired you at night. The word zivug used here literally means to pair, although union and specifically conjugal union would probably be a more accurate rendition according to the meaning of the Kabbalah. By ascending to higher levels in the secret of Mayim Nukvim, The holy sparks cause the upper parts of Fim to unite together to go into a zivug. Thus, they draw light down from above to the lower levels. The strength of the yearning, because it is pure, makes possible total adherence. The nefesh can remain there and not descend. Thus, the first part of the verse has been explained. My nefesh has desired you at night, because the night is the time of desire when the souls ascend as Mayim Nukvim to the supernal well. In the morning, when it is time for the descent, then my nefesh does not descend, but my ruach in its place descends into my body to seek you. The Hebrew word that has been translated here to seek you is as shachreka, the root of which is shachar, and shachar means morning. Thus, the second part of the verse will be rendered, in the morning my ruach will enter into me, in the place of my nefesh. In the morning, when it comes time for the nefesh to descend once again, and it does not, then my ruach can enter me instead. This is why it was not my nefesh that seeks for you in the morning. And this is according to both meanings of Asharecha. Rather, it is his ruach that enters him to become rectified. Therefore, the initial letters of the Hebrew words that have been translated in the night, my nefesh, even my ruach, Beit Aleph Resh, spelled Be'ir, in Hebrew meaning well, as in a well of water. This alludes to that was mentioned earlier, that the nefesh longs to ascend to the supernal well. That these initial letters spell Be'ir, meaning well, is an indication to the Rav that something is happening here in this verse that is taking place in the supernal well. And he has explained the verse accordingly. Now he wants to draw a practical application from what he has been expounding in this section, namely that this verse should be recited at night before going to sleep. Hence, if a person knows on his own that he has rectified his nefesh, he can say the verse, my nefesh has desired you at night. Even with my ruach that is within me will I seek you. In Hebrew, Ahashrecha, before laying down to sleep. He should recite it concentrating upon the esoteric meaning that has been explained here in order to attain his ruach, and similarly his neshama. Then he will not need additional gilgulim. Understand this esoteric secret well, and be cautious with it. Indeed, in the prescribed recitation of the bedtime Shema in the prayer books of the Ari, at least according to the Ben Ish Chai, this verse appears and it is recited by everyone every night. There is another verse that is also recited each night in the recitation of the bedtime Shema. The reason for the recitation of the second verse is similar to what we have explained in this section, but not exactly. The Rav will now explain the difference between them and why both verses need to be recited. However, the verse that we are accustomed to say, in your hand I will deposit my soul, or a verse from Psalms, doesn't help to accomplish what has been explained here. It only means that the nefesh will ascend as a deposit. In the morning it will return to descend. However, the verse, my nephesh has desired you at night. Even with my ruach that is within me will I seek you, means that the nephesh will remain above, and that either the ruach or the neshama will descend in its place. And note that Shmuel ben Chaim, the son of the Chaim Vital, says the verse, my nephesh has desired you at night, even with my ruach that is within me will I seek for you, is explained in gate 6 of the Sha'ar HaKavanot, and see it there. This is the end of chapter 3, but my commentary. Do you know the difference between reincarnation, Gilgul, and Yibum, the result of a man dying without a child, and the change associated with the exchanging parts of the soul at night? This has all been discussed in chapter 3. Also discussed in chapter 3 is the idea of the nefesh being on its own and always unified. Do you remember why this is necessary? If you don't know the answers to these questions, reread chapter 3. Now we can go back to the landing page for the Advanced Reincarnation, and we would open up section 6E, which will start chapter 4. Section 1, which is titled, When the Second Gilgul is Like the First. In this section, we will learn another way that all three levels of the soul, the nefesh, the ruach, and the neshama, may be received in one lifetime, even though it is not his first Gilgul. There are two other distinctions that apply only to Gilgulim. They apply only to Gilgulim and not to Ibur, nor to Yibum. Firstly, it is a first-time Gilgul that earns his nefesh, his ruach, and his neshama, and then sins and blemishes them. In his next reincarnation, he cannot rectify them all at once, except through the device that was explained beforehand. The saying of the two particular verses that we just discussed. When going to bed, he should recite the verse, my nephesh has desired you at night. This was explained at the end of the last chapter. The two distinctions mentioned here are made possible by entirely different circumstances, depending upon what happened during the first Gilgul. Either he earned all his nefesh, his ruach, and his neshama during the first Gilgul before he sinned, as in the first possibility that we have just read, or he earned only his nefesh before he sinned in the first Gilgul, which is the second possibility that will be explained here. In the first possibility, he cannot receive all his nefesh, ruach, and neshama in his second Gilgul, except through the device of reciting the verse, my nefesh has desired you at night, as was explained at the end of the last chapter. Then his nefesh will remain above, in the supernal well. And in the morning, his ruach will come down in its place. Now the rabbi will explain the second possible way of achieving all nefesh, ruach, and neshama in a second gilgul. Secondly, if a first-time gilgul earns only his nefesh and sins and blemishes it, when he reincarnates, he can achieve nefesh, ruach, and neshama in that gilgul itself, since he had not previously damaged his ruach and his neshama. They can join the nefesh after it has been rectified, as if it were a first reincarnation, just as it said, if he merits more. In his first gilgul, he rectified the nefesh that he received at birth, and he never received either his ruach or neshama before sinning and dying. The ruach and the neshama were never affected by the sins he did with his nefesh. If he rectifies his nefesh after reincarnating with it, then the ruach can come to him in the same body, since it was never damaged. If he merits completing his ruach as well, then his neshama can join both his nefesh and ruach in the same body, even though it is his second reincarnation. This is possible because the ruach and the neshama were not previously blemished. Otherwise, each must come back in its own gilgul, as we have said until now. How can a rectified nefesh become the vehicle for a damaged ruach or neshama? This is not the case when they all have all come and all have become blemished. For how can a rectified nefesh become the vehicle for a damaged ruach or neshama? However, if he only damaged the nefesh, then all three can return together in a single gilgul. My commentary. For gilgulim only, you have a first gilgul. The nefesh does not rectify completely. There may be a second gilgul. The nefesh does rectify completely. The ruach comes, sin happens. There will be a second gilgul with the nefesh from a ger, a convert. The nefesh does not rectify completely. Sin happens. The nefesh completes the rectification. The ruach comes without a second gilgul by saying the prayer, the two verses in the nighttime Shema. The nefesh, the ruach, and the neshama is received. Then there is a sin. The neshama is affected by the sin. Rectification may happen in the first gilgul along with possible saying the prayer as above. Essentially, my commentary was giving you the different alternatives. This is the end of section 1 of chapter 4. Does anybody have a question? Rectifying the Soul, Chapter 4, Section 2. It seems to me that all the aspects of rectification are really the fulfillment of mitzvot, which are dependent upon the limbs of the nefesh. All blemishes result from violating negative mitzvot. It is well known that there are 248 positive mitzvot, and and 365 negative mitzvot. The negative mitzvot tell us what not to do. Their number corresponds to the 248 limbs of the human body, which is made in the image of the nefesh. This is referring to the positive mitzvot. Thus, each one of the negative mitzvot corresponds to one of the limbs of the nefesh. And transgression of any one of them causes a corresponding blemish or damage in one of the limbs of the nefesh. Actually, in this paragraph, starting with the second, where it says their number corresponds to the 248 limbs of the human body, it should be the 365 limbs. 365 sinews is the term that is usually used. But in both cases, the metaphor is the nefesh has an image of a human body. Continuing to read. The positive mitzvot, on the other hand, require a person to actively do something, and they cause tikkun, which is rectification of the nefesh. The complete entry of the nefesh into the body, which is called tikkun of the nefesh, is accomplished only through the performance of mitzvot. Although sins blemish the nefesh, they do not prevent its sparks from entering. A person can perform positive mitzvot and in the same lifetime transgress negative precepts. As a result of the positive mitzvot, he will be rectifying levels of soul one after the other. The sparks of the nefesh will be entering the body and becoming rectified. On the other hand, as a result of the negative mitzvot that he has transgressed, he will have caused blemish or damage. These will have to be atoned for, one way or the other, but they do not necessarily prevent the progress of tikkun. My commentary. This is very important to understand. Blemishes come from doing a do-not mitzvah. Rectification is made by performing a do mitzvah. When one looks at the list of mitzvot, there are many mitzvot that are in both columns. There is both a do mitzvah and a do-not mitzvah. One example is Shabbat. Let's take an example that a person violated guarding Shabbat, which is a do-not mitzvah. Let's say they watch TV on Shabbat by turning on the TV. This damaged their eyes, their fingers, their buttocks, and many other parts of their body. How is this corrected? By keeping the mitzvah of Shabbat. They will have the same desire, and they will do binding by striking and not turn on the TV. This will correct the blemish. Let us say they watch TV for 20 years in a row, every Shabbat. Do they need to keep 20 years of Shabbatot? We do not yet have that answer. It is up to Hashem and the Bet Din that rules when he passes. It may take a one Shabbat, a few Shabbats, or 20 years, depending on the strength of the evil inclination, to turn on the TV. The language that is used in this section varies and seems to imply different words for the same thing. The words are blemish, tikkun, atoned, becoming, and rectified. The term tikkun of the nefesh refers to the entry of the nefesh into the body. This implies that there are separate steps in this process of the nefesh entering the body. Although it is not clear in the way this section is translated, let me try and clear all of this up. The level of the soul called nefesh is not one complete unity. There are 613 parts of the nefesh, which do not have to enter the body at the same time. There is also a process for the parts of the nefesh moving into the body. The Torah uses the words, the nefesh is in the blood. The blood is composed of two parts, the red and the white parts. This represents the right and left columns, and therefore the blood is the central column of the body. This is due to the blood having both columns within it. Let us say the heart component of the nefesh enters the body. How it gets to the heart is not expressed in this chapter, and the metaphor is not explained yet. This leads to a lot of misunderstanding of how this all works. As we grow in our understanding, hopefully it will become clear. This is one of the reasons that the Kabbalists tell us to read a book once and then reread it again, as if we had not read it before. We will be able to understand much more of the book from the first reading during the second reading. That is the end of the section. Are there any questions? Let me see if we have enough time to read section 3, reincarnation and resurrection. Yeah, it looks like we will have enough time. However, there are two other aspects regarding the matter. The first aspect concerns a person who only received a nefesh during his first lifetime, but didn't merit to completely rectify it, and then he died. Since this first body did not complete the rectification of all aspects of the nefesh, then at the time of the resurrection of the dead, only those parts that were rectified in the lifetime of that body return with it. The resurrection of the dead is a fundamental principle of Judaism. Since the body participated in the performance of mitzvot, it is only just that it should also share in the eternal reward for that performance. Therefore, that body too comes back into life in the time of the resurrection of the dead, together with those parts of the soul that were rectified during its lifetime. When this particular reincarnation resurrects, it receives only those sparks that were rectified through it. The other parts of the nefesh return to the other bodies wherein they were rectified. Therefore, when the nefesh reincarnates into another body to complete its tikkun, it can achieve nefesh and ruach and neshama. And this is done by saying the prayer as we described in section 3 at the end. in chapter 4, section 1, for the second possibility. When the nefesh is completed in the second Gilgul, it can become a vehicle for the unblemished ruach and neshama. In this respect, it is like a first-time Gilgul. However, what concerns us here is not the possibility that all three parts of the soul can be received in the second Gilgul, but what happens in the time of the resurrection to the body of the first Gilgul that has rectified only a few parts of the nefesh. Then all the parts of the nefesh that were rectified in the second body, together with the ruach and the neshama, belong to the second body at the time of the resurrection. It was in the second body that the remainder of the nefesh, the ruach and the neshama, were rectified. The first body has no portion in the ruach and the neshama, but it does have a share in part of the nefesh, the part that was rectified within it. The remainder of the aspects of the rectified soul belong to the second body. The rule is that the body of each person will be resurrected with those parts of the soul that were rectified in its lifetime. If only a few parts of nefesh were rectified by the person of the first Gilgul, then those few parts that amount to nothing more than a minimal nefesh will be all that is available for the resurrection of the first body. Now the rabbi will now draw a comparison between this minimal nefesh and the minimal nefesh that we learned about in the case of Yibum. This is like what was explained in the Saba of Mishpatim regarding Yibum. The first body did not succeed at procreating. It only merits the individual sparks of the nefesh. This is the spark that was left inside the woman during the first intimacy. However, the rest of the nefesh, with the ruach and the neshama, belong to the second body. We learned about Yibum in chapter 3, section 6. Yibum occurs when a person dies without leaving any children in this world, and it is considered a lack of success to the extent that it is as if the first body never came into the world. The entire nefesh that was in the first body reincarnates to a second body, and in the time of the resurrection, it will arise with the second body. Only a minimal spirit, called the spirit that the husband left within his wife, is available for the resurrection of the first body. The rabbi is comparing that minimal spirit that was left within the woman to what is discussed here, namely the few parts of the nefesh that were rectified in the first Gilgul. In both cases, in Yibum and in the case discussed here, the rest of the nefesh and the ruach and the neshama belong to the second body that will arise at the time of the resurrection. There is an additional basis to the comparison between our case, when only a few parts of the nefesh are rectified in the first Gilgul, and that of Yibum, when no progeny were left in the world. In our case, as well as Yibum, the nefesh is not bearing any fruit. In our case, this is because it has no part in any ruach or neshama. They belong to the body of another Gilgul. This is a secret of what is written in the Zohar, in Chaye Sarah. Those bodies that were not successful are as if they never existed. This is remarkable because it is known that there is no child of Israel who is not filled with mitzvot like a pomegranate. Why should it, an unsuccessful body, be non-existent at the time of the resurrection? The pomegranate is a fruit that is full of seeds. Indeed, some say that the original pomegranate had 613 seeds, corresponding to the number of positive and negative mitzvot in the Torah. The sages used it to symbolize the internal condition of the Jewish people. They declared, "Even the empty ones among you are filled with mitzvot, like a pomegranate." When a child of Israel does a mitzvah, he connects to and participates in all the mitzvot that were ever done throughout history. Thus, even the most insignificant of them is filled with mitzvot like a pomegranate. How then can there be a body that has no part in the mitzvot to justify its resurrection? However, this alludes to the idea that the main source of pleasure in the time to come is on the level of ruach and neshama. This first body does not even have a complete nefesh. All it has is the spark left in his wife by the initial intimacy. Thus, it has no pleasure, and it is as if it doesn't exist. This person's participation in some bit of the ecstasy of the world to come is proven by the statement of the Saba in the Mishpatim Zohar. It's verse number 112. My commentary. The section referred to above as Sulam 112 runs to verse 119. Starts at 112 and runs to 119. In it, it explains how the original man is resurrected from the rishama, the impression left in the womb of his wife during zivug. This allows him to return to the world in another body, which may finish the correction, and both bodies will resurrect. Yet the first man will not have a complete nefesh. One of the tasks that will need to be completed during the period of the resurrection will be the unification of the nefesh from the two bodies. This is not discussed, yet hinted at, since it belongs to the period after the Mashiach. Suffice it to say that there will be different energy levels in the various bodies of people after the resurrection. And it only takes one part of a nefesh to activate a body. This at least is my opinion, as I have not read this anywhere, yet I have seen hints in various sections of the Zohar. That's the end of section 3. Does anyone have any questions? Our next class will be at 7 o'clock West Coast time, where we will have a Zohar class. I wish you all a shalom and a good evening, and hope to see you in the next class.
Shalom.